This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 18th of November 2022. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. Our readers today are Richard Martin.
Hello.
Claire Porter.
Hello.
And I am your presenter for this week, Peter Lydiard. So we start with our usual regular notices. The first is to say, if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please contact us on 01962 86 1229. 01962 86 1229. This number can be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. And as I'm sure you know by now, if you use the buttons on your box, you can move on from an item before it finishes or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. And if you've got a computer or a tablet, apart from using the memory stick in your box, you can load it onto your own device. You can also access the weekly recordings of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on news on the header bar, locate the recordings you want to hear and click on download. The recordings are listed in date order with the most recent first on the list. Now we start with our usual headline stories, but this week there are three headline stories rolled into one concerning local government finance. So we'll start with the first of these. From Richard, please.
So this item predates yesterday's budget statement.
Okay.
So you need to bear that in mind. Fears raised over council budgets. Council budgets in Hampshire and the wider South East are at breaking point, with fears raised over catastrophic cuts in the autumn budget statement next week. In the autumn budget statement on November the 17th, the Chancellor of the Exchequer is expected to outline measures to fill in a so-called black hole in the nation's finances. The financial void was reported to be as large as £60 billion, which could require up to £35 billion of spending cuts and £25 billion raised through taxation. South East Councils, an association of local authorities in the South East region, said that if next week's statement includes cuts to public spending, it will be catastrophic for local authorities. It said council budgets are already at breaking point, and we are hearing from a number of South East Council's members that their services are already at risk as a direct result of rising costs and inflationary pressure. The funding model for local government is broken. Councils need to be empowered to do what is right for communities and build on the South East's economic strengths. Devolution of powers, including finance, would allow the South East to invest in its future rather than lobby Whitehall to get our own taxpayers' money back. The South East is one of three key net contributors to His Majesty's Treasury. This gives us a strong basis for fiscal devolution.
Right, thank you, Richard. Claire, please.
Council slated overspending. Civic chiefs were quizzed over their wasteful expenditure on the same day they agreed to increase the cost of services. Charges are set to rise for a host of council services, including city centre parking, green waste collection and council tax. They were given the green light at a cabinet meeting earlier this week. The council said that rising inflation and interest rates caused by COVID and the Ukraine war has stretched public resources. Councillor Margot Power, Member for Finance, said, "In common with councils across the country, we are facing inflationary pressures not seen for many years and immensely variable inflationary pressures which have led to some difficulties predicting our expenditure. In the absence of clarity on what, if any, financial support there will be on our budget planning for the next year and beyond, this has involved many difficult decisions. Over the past few months, Councillor Power has been meeting with heads of service and Cabinet to find savings. As part of the approved recommendations, £450,000 will be used to fund independent reviews of key services. However, Councillor for Wanston and Micheldever, Stephen Godfrey, was critical of the authority's handling of its finances. He said, "The report does not provide a schedule for achieving the £2 million per annum saving needed in the next 15 months, nor are there any proposals to deliver these additional savings. There seems little control over continued wasteful expenditure, such as the £800,000 being spent on consultants, or the £650,000 on business rates on empty investment properties." Councillor Power said the City Council is looking at plans to reduce the usage of agency staff as well as other measures. "We live in challenging times," she said, "and the proposals that justified the purchase of property some years ago are no longer sound proposals and have to be revisited." The additional measures agreed upon include extending on-street parking restrictions to Sundays, increases to parking charges in market towns such as Wickham and Bishop's Waltham, an increase to council tax, and changes to business rates. A detailed budget will be considered by the council in February 2023. Council leader Martin Todd said, "This is not an easy thing, and we shouldn't pretend that we're happy to be in this situation."
Thank you, Claire. Now, I've got the third of these local authority financial headlines, which is Council sleepwalking into financial disaster. The leader of Hampshire County Council has warned that it is sleepwalking into financial disaster. Councillor Rob Humby said the authority could face bankruptcy within the next year unless the government tackles the looming financial crisis. This comes as Councillor Humby and leader of Kent County Council, Councillor Roger Gough, outlined the drastic budget implications facing the two upper-tier authorities in a joint letter to the Prime Minister, Chancellor and Secretary of State. They called for the government's immediate help and a clear plan for long-term financial stability if the two councils are to avoid filing bankruptcy notices within the next year or so. Councillor Humby said, "Both Hampshire and Kent are high-performing, financially well-run and long-respected county councils. However, we face budget deficits over the next few years of a scale that has never been seen before, but not of our own doing. We have experienced more than 12 years of national austerity and cuts to our core budgets. Inflation continues to grow, along with demand for services such as social care for vulnerable adults and children. We have no autonomy to be able to introduce initiatives for some local services to help generate our own revenue. We have gone as far as we can to close the budget gaps we have faced to date, and there is nowhere left to go in future without severely impacting some of the most vulnerable people in our society." County councils carry out many important functions on behalf of the government, which both COVID and the Ukraine crisis had clearly demonstrated, and are also well placed to help stimulate and grow the economy. We won't be able to keep doing all of this if we're forced to scale back our vital services to the bare minimum. Excuse me. We cannot sit by and let two great counties sleepwalk into a financial disaster. Even with drastic cuts to services, we won't be able to close our future budget gaps. And based on current forecasts, our authorities would have no option but to consider formal talks with our auditors and Treasury over the coming months. It was previously reported that Hampshire County Council needs to make savings of £80 million before April 2023 to balance the books. The authority has already cut £22.6 million from children's services and £10.2 million off its transport and environment budget. Earlier this year, it faced widespread backlash for slashing £700,000 in charitable grants to social care groups. Now, Richard, please.
Yes, well, good news day, isn't it, really?
Yes.
Slightly differently, developer eyes a site for ice rink complex. A developer has offered to transform a vacant site on the outskirts of the city into an Olympic-sized ice rink and leisure complex, the Chronicle can exclusively reveal. The facility, which would replace the disused Bar End depot, would also include a budget hotel, restaurants and a convenience store, alongside a four-lane curling pad, 10-pin bowling and a space for climbing. It's understood the major project would be privately funded, and the unnamed developer has already thrown the hat in the ring as one of the potential suitors for the site, joining 50 other expressions of interest. The bid is being supported by Winchester Ice Sports Association and former BBC Sports Personality of the Year Robin Cousins, who's been trying to bring the facility, which would be a centre of excellence for skating, to the city for the last 5 to 6 years. Members of the group were invited to tour the depot before the initial proposals were formally registered with the council last September. However, any prospect of a deal now looks to be on a knife edge after the developer confirmed it is yet to hear back from the council as to whether it's being considered for the next phases of public consultation. Edna Bowden, one of the founding members of the Winchester Ice Sports Association, said, "I'm extremely disappointed that leisure wasn't mentioned by the council as a potential use for the old depot site in its notice about upcoming consultation. It seems to me that the council has already whittled down the 50 or so applicants that have expressed an interest, and obviously leisure wasn't one of them. Our fear has always been that the decision will have been made before it reached the public. I wanted the people of Winchester to know what they could potentially be missing out on. This would be a fantastic leisure facility for the whole community, and there's nothing else like it on the whole of the South Coast. I've been a resident of Winchester since 1970. There's so much that could be done in Winchester. People need things to do and places to go, and an ice rink would have provided that. But we have to face the fact that it isn't what the council want, and it hasn't been for the past few years, and that's that. This would be a huge opportunity missed. It would have put Winchester on the map. However, the City Council has insisted it is yet to close the door on any of the potential bidders. A spokesperson said, "We can't comment on individual bids at this stage as they are classed as commercially sensitive. However, all types of potential uses that have been received by the council's agent as expressions of interest will be covered in the forthcoming public engagement sessions. The first stage of marketing was limited to expressions of interest and not formal bids. Any of the bids that are progressed in due course would be subject to consultation as part of the planning process, and interested parties will be kept informed by the council's agent." The council is running a community drop-in event on Thursday, November the 24th, in the foyer of Winchester Sport and Leisure Park from 3 p.m. to 8 p.m.
Thank you, Richard. Claire?
City in need of a new council estate. Winchester civic chiefs should find land to build a new council housing estate, a meeting has heard. Former city councillor Ian Tate, now a planning consultant, is pressing the city council to look at a modern version of Stanmore, which was one of the first purpose-built estates in the country in the 1920s. Mr. Tate told the Cabinet Housing Committee, "I want to strongly suggest that the council considers finding enough land for a new 21st century council estate, which will be close to Winchester and not in the southern parishes." Looking back at the history of council housing, Winchester played a very important role, delivering significant numbers of new homes, not piecemeal, but by building large estates at Stanmore, Highcliffe, Winall, Wick, and Abbots Barton. On a large site, 1,000 new homes could be built, thus removing uncertainty from many communities as to whether there would be new developments near them. Mr. Tate said the recent smaller-scale developments, such as the 77 homes in the Valley, Stanmore, and 76 at Winall Flats, were being developed without any new community benefits. Andrew Palmer, head of new homes delivery at the City Council, said he supported the idea of a new estate. Clearly, it is more efficient to provide housing on a big scale and save staff time and resources. It is always good to have larger schemes come forward. It is something we will continue to look for. Mr. Palmer said large schemes made it much simpler to provide infrastructure such as new schools and roads. Richard Botham, strategic director, said the council was always looking for opportunities to buy land and has set aside several million pounds. "We have an interest in a number of sites at the moment," he said. Earlier this year, the Chronicle revealed how developer Drew Smith was looking to develop around 320 homes at Pitvale off Romsey Road to the southwest of the city. Pitvale is one of the sites being considered as part of the new local plan. Other opportunities for housing include Sir John Moore Barracks, Silver Hill, Station Approach, the Cattle Market, and Ravenswood at Wickham.
Thank you, Claire. Now, our last headline story, I do suggest that you don't listen to it while eating, because it is, to say the least, a little unsavoury. It's headed "Fatbergs and Blockages Clogging the City's Sewers." Gruesome pictures of fatbergs and other blockages have prompted a warning about what people are putting down their drains. Photos from Winchester's sewer network have revealed the unsavoury consequence of washing away grease, oil and food waste. The images shared with the Chronicle, and they are gruesome pictures, I have to say. Good job this isn't television. Just shows what Southern Water has been tackling under the city streets in recent days. The utility company launched a major investigation after sewage burst through several drains following a heavy rainfall at the start of the month. Shoppers were forced to sidestep human excrement for the second time this year as residents, business owners and civic chiefs called for urgent action. An overground pump has since been installed in Little Minster Street, while teams equipped with CCTV cameras explore the extent of the issue. Workers managed to move the equipment to allow for the Winchester bonfire procession to continue as planned. However, the delivery of Winchester's iconic 38-foot-tall Christmas tree was delayed on Monday because of the ongoing operation. Alex Saunders, head of wastewater networks at Southern Water, said, "We are pressing ahead with repairs of the sewer in central Winchester after clearing out several blockages on Friday and over the weekend. We know the Christmas tree is unveiling is an important event in the city. We'd like to thank both Winchester Bid and Winchester City Councils for supporting these repairs. We're working as hard as possible to mend the sewer and would like to thank businesses and residents for their patience and understanding during this time. Christmas is a time when fatbergs and fat are a common problem in the sewer network. And in this case, we discovered large amounts of fat blocking the sewer among the issues we have encountered. And we'd like people to help us battle these blockages by making simple changes like putting all food waste in the bin rather than down the sink." Right, thank you, everyone. Now we have the death notices followed by Christian comment. Blake, Richard Stephen Blake, peacefully at home, 24th of October, age 72.
Carr, Anne Carr, known as Bingo Annie.
Godber, Victoria Jo Godber, died at Royal Hampshire County Hospital, 8th of November.
Hudson, Patricia Anne Hudson, peacefully on the 30th of October.
Jones, Sophia Gillian Jones, née Kite, peacefully at home on the 4th of November, aged 72.
Mead, Anthony Mead, peacefully at home on the 28th of October, aged 89.
Parry Jones, Alan Parry Jones, peacefully at home on the 7th of November.
Priddle, Terence Roger John Priddle, peacefully at Basingstoke Hospital on the 30th of October, aged 83.
Sheherdson, Andrew George Sheherdson, 13th of October, age 65.
Small, David Benjamin Mainwaring Small, peacefully on the 4th of November, aged 87.
Wheatley, Tony Wheatley, died suddenly on the 28th of October, aged 55.
Thank you. Now we'll have a Christian comment from Claire, please.
OK. This is written by Rosemary Baker today and is headed Support Hope. "We have just come back from our annual trip to Scotland. This time we managed to avoid bridges getting washed away by heavy rain, although the roads were very wet, particularly in the west. As usual, one of our first stops was the Tourist Information Office in Ballater. I like to know if there are any events of interest or new attractions that have opened. Sadly, in recent years, it has been more about places that have closed. I gathered up a collection of leaflets to look at over lunch. I discovered one which I had thought was medieval heritage events was in fact medical heritage events. I might have ignored it, except as some of you may recall, I was a doctor, so felt obliged to read it. Apparently, it was advertising lectures and exhibitions at the Museum of the Royal College of Physicians and Surgeons of Glasgow, in support of the Hope Foundation. This is the philanthropic arm of the college and supports health-related projects locally, nationally, and internationally. Yeah. Support Hope was blazoned on the front page of the leaflet. I can understand hoping for a cure for various illnesses and, of course, cancer. Also, all who suffer pain and distress, together with their families and carers, will hope for an end to their distress. Remembrance Day and Sunday have just passed. Most of us would hope for and support the idea of an end to war and conflict, and hope for peace. The National Service is held at the Cenotaph in Whitehall. The word cenotaph is derived from the Greek kinos, tephos, meaning empty tomb. A cenotaph is a monument, sometimes in the form of a tomb, to a person or group of persons buried elsewhere. We usually use the term for the cenotaph in Whitehall. This is Britain's chief national war memorial for the dead of the First and Second World Wars and subsequent conflicts. It is the focus of national ceremonies of remembrance, held annually since 1919. The empty tomb in the Christian faith symbolises its main belief that Jesus Christ, who was crucified and buried, has risen from the dead. The resurrection of Jesus gives Christian believers the hope of life after death, i.e. eternal life. Hope is a very powerful emotion and as such helps people cope with all sorts of trials and tribulations. It is part of the human condition and is not exclusive to any religion or faith. There are many things we all hope for: the end of the war in Ukraine, the end of the cost of living crisis, the end of floods and droughts, the end of pain and suffering. Christians believe that prayer can support hope, but there are other things we can all do that will also support hope for ourselves and our world. And that was written by Rosemary A. Baker.
Thank you, Claire. Now we'll move on to letters to the editor. There are 9 letters to the Hampshire Chronicle this week, and they are on 9 different subjects. So have the first letter, please, Richard.
And this comes from Jock MacDonald, who says, "Rishi, action now." "I agree with Mike Moore, Chronicle November 11, that Rishi Sunak is instinctively right-wing. But Sunak's novice MP support for Brexit 6 years ago was more internationalist than most of his Brexiteers. He clearly had his eyes on India and across world intercommunications. Now, with 7 years in Parliament behind him and a split Conservative Party with him, he's clever enough, I think, to move into more important and more beneficial mindsets. I doubt whether the Chancellor's autumn statement will reveal this, although I hope it will show just an inkling of it. Rishi's international outlook and clear opposition to Trussonomics give number 10 and number 11 a good chance to do something acceptable in the short term. But our long-term future is now, and this is where I judge him. He must tackle the climate crisis and support climate justice now. If we wait another 2 years for another party's administration after a general election, the door of opportunity will be almost shut. Rishi has the intelligence to read the runes. He'll be having weekly conversations with the King, who knows his stuff on global warming, and he'll have 2 international conferences, COP27 and the G20, under his belt. That said, the last 12 years of Conservative administration earned nothing like applause. So seldom have so many years occupied by one party in government seen so much egotism, so much inefficiency, and so much power grabbing for its own sake, regardless of the means to do it. Jock MacDonald, Stockbridge Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
Thank you, Richard. Claire, please.
Saxon experience. I was the first visitor at the 878 experience when it opened on Saturday, and was most impressed with the Hampshire Cultural Trust's ambition in linking up with the leading immersive technology of Assassin's Creed. Some may think that the worlds of history and gaming might not mix, but I would recommend setting aside any preconceptions and paying a visit. Press the buttons, watch the videos, and take it all in. Whilst the video explaining the creation of the graphic materials is jaw-dropping, the goal of recreating Anglo-Saxon Winchester around 878, the Battle of Edington, is inspired and successful. Good on the creators for recognising and showcasing the somewhat neglected importance of Winchester, Wessex, and the Anglo-Saxons in our history. After the visit to 878 in the Brooks Centre, I was then self-guided around Anglo-Saxon Winchester, courtesy of the augmented reality app provided for my phone. A short explanatory video of what to expect and how to use the app before stepping out into Anglo-Saxon Winchester. It might have helped me on my way, but after a little initial puzzlement, I was able to create and decorate my virtual shield on leaving the Brooks, and so have some protection before I set off up the high street and around the city, and seeing it virtually at least as it would have looked over 1,100 years ago. I arrived finally at the Nunnenminster with a completed map of the time, having picked up the relevant tokens and having enjoyed all the Anglo-Saxon images and vignettes at points around the city. In essence, I would recommend the 878 experience, but if you are not into the newfangled techny stuff, I suggest the suspending of any bias or the taking along of a child to assist, as this is their world. Harry Mycock, Quarry Road, St Giles Hill, Winchester.
Thank you, Claire. My letter is written by Georgiana Robertson. Last week, Chronicle November the 10th, you featured articles about the Hat Fair and Winchester Heritage Open Days. Both have a common theme that they are hugely enjoyed and appreciated. They are also free to attend, something that's getting to be quite rare these days. Volunteer effort plays a big part. In fact, Hampshire History Trust, who run the Winchester Heritage Open Days 10-day festival, is entirely volunteer-run. So whilst both wonderful festivals benefit from voluntary effort within their respective charities, Play to the Crowd and Hampshire History Trust, neither is viable without some funding. Both charities clearly need donations now. If, like me, you'd like to see these festivals continue, please support them with any donation you can via their websites. Winchester smiles during these festivals. Let's not lose that for 2023. That's Georgina Robertson, Winchester Street, Chil Bolton, Stockbridge. Richard, please.
Tony Gaster says, by British. Readers may know Hampshire County Council are promoting a scheme for homeowners to get solar panels. I signed up and my quote at £5,756 would produce an annual energy saving of just £271. However, when discussing the details, I discovered all the equipment would come from China. Now, there are UK manufacturers for solar, and I am surprised that Hampshire County Council would favour promoting Chinese suppliers. Surely the government has stressed we need to expand our own economy. Tony Glaster, Old Kennels Lane, Oliver's Battery, Winchester.
Thank you, Richard. Claire?
Vote for GPs. You report that the Winchester BID has been re-elected for another 5 years, starting in April next year. May I suggest that all local GP practices should be subject to the same requirements, so that patients' tax-paying customers are given the opportunity to vote for or not the renewal of their doctor's mandate. John Kind, Christchurch Road, Winchester.
Thank you, Claire. This letter is written by John Miller and it's headed More Parking. I was walking through that area on my way to the athletics track on the day and saw the chaos, Chronicle November the 10th, members fume as swimming gala sparks parking chaos. Every event, in my experience, needs an overflow parking facility. Now, there is none at Bar End to serve the leisure park, King George V playing field, now being refurbished and expanded, or indeed the university sports facility, which is home to Winchester and District Athletic Club, who are the third largest athletic club in the UK, numbering over 900 members. The athletic facilities are managed at a very high standard, which has attracted favourable comments from many visiting clubs and athletes. The facility will undoubtedly attract county and regional championships in the future, attracting many hundreds of cars to the city of Winchester. League matches would number 200. All this benefits the city and its traders. It's a win-win situation. The Bar End Depot links all three of these facilities and facilitates all their needs, plus any problems experienced by local residents as a result of expansion. I have been involved in sport, football, cricket and athletics in Winchester for the past 62 years and seen too many dead ends through lack of vision. I served for many years on the now defunct Winchester Sports Council. The past has passed, the future is tomorrow. These are my own private views. That's written by John Miller, Wessex Drive, Week, Winchester. Richard, please.
This letter comes from I.J. Holmes. Junction, top priority for action. What an area we live in. Revolting sewage in the city centre, more debate about the closure of the Andover Road, diverting never-ending traffic through King's Barton, another fatal accident, as well as further minor road accidents at the Cart and Horses Junction in Kingsworthy, little advance with Junction 9 on the M3 and its implications, and newer upgraded infrastructure seriously lacking in some housing developments. All highlighted in recent editions of your paper. Surely we've long passed the point of discussion, debate, and really reached the point of serious action before even more houses are given permission to be built and more fatal or serious road accidents occur. Financial support may be limited now for some time, but these areas must surely rate as top priorities. I.J. Holmes, Mortimer Close, Kingsworthy.
Thank you, Richard. Claire?
Tragic waste. As a long-standing volunteer for Winchester's Heritage Open Days, I'm in a position to comment as to the huge amount of effort that has been put in behind the scenes to run the festival over many years. Chronicle November the 10th. Every single festival involves months and months of planning and preparation in the making. So although the festival runs in September every year, the process for putting it together starts at the very beginning of the year and becomes very nearly a full-time job. Nikki Gottlieb and Becky Brown worked tirelessly, unpaid, for many years, even managing to pull off an online festival in 2020 during the height of the pandemic. To read that it may not run without support, simply because it needs £10,000 in the next 3 months, would be a tragic waste, in my opinion. These events are free, put on by an army of willing volunteers, businesses and venues, and we should all be supportive of the festival. We cannot expect volunteers to continue to run something that adds so much, but is so time-consuming, without expecting at some point they are simply unable to carry on doing so without proper support. One thing Winchester has in abundance is heritage, so it's about time we celebrated that, and as a community, put our hands in our pockets and find the money either through the city council funding, or donating to their campaign via their website. Michael Hall, Worthy Road, Winchester.
Thank you, Claire. The last letter is written by Simon Lever. It's headed, Be Sensitive. Bushfield Camp has been redundant since the mid-1970s. There is indeed potential for appropriate development, including science, academia, media and health sectors. Chronicle, November the 10th. Being close to Winchester would be ideal as long as the planned consultation with residents is genuinely open. I am a frequent walker along the White Chute Ridge leading to the beautiful avenue of trees which are adjacent to the Bushfield Camp. Any development must take into account the proximity of natural areas which are most popular with residents. Whatever is agreed, the height of structures must not be intrusive. Finally, vehicle access and public transport accessibility would be crucial. The two-lane Badger Farm Road is a busy and safe access, and that would be essential. The actual camp area has been unused for some decades and could be ideal for sensible, considerate development. Watch this space. That was written by Simon Lever of Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester. Well, if you have an opinion or a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can write to them on 01962 860836. That is 01962 860836. Or you can email them on news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you could write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Or you could even drop in when you're next in Winchester Town Centre. Right, well, we now have editorial comment read by Richard, please.
The question of a new council estate. Former councillor Ian Tait raises a vital issue when he spoke at a recent city council meeting to call for a new planned council housing estate near Winchester. The issue is highly emotive, with lots of people saying any loss of green fields would be a huge mistake. But the idea has merit and deserves to be looked at closely. Winchester has a long history of planned council house development on countryside, starting with Stanmore in the 1920s, and then post-war Wick, Winnell and Abbots Barton. Some 40% of King's Barton will be affordable housing for people on the council waiting list. The lack of such council housing has been a major issue, skewing the makeup of Winchester and turning it into an older and more middle-class place than it used to be. Some people who live in houses in Winchester claim that any more development will wreck the place. This is nonsense. Winchester has changed, but was not wrecked when the railway arrived and Hyde and Fulford were built in Victorian times, while Badger Fard was developed in the 1980s. Letters welcomed.
Thank you, Richard. Right, this week's opinion piece is written by George Hayter and it's headed, Could You Live Here? My wife and I have recently found ourselves living in a house unfit to live in by most modern standards. We'd been in this uncomfortable three-bedroom property about 10 miles from Winchester for 2 weeks. Just walking around it has caused painful injury. It's cramped and drafty, with thermal and noise insulation far below normal specifications. What is more, building regulations governing this type of house prevent us doing much to improve the features which would make most home buyers dismiss the building as uninhabitable. Despite its drawbacks, we are thrilled to be in it. Because our home looks nice, and because it is very old, we think it's luxurious. Most of our pretty thatched cottage was built about 500 years ago, and we cannot make any alteration to any part of it, inside or out, without official permission. Our building's insurance is many times more expensive than our old house back in suburbia. There's a bit of work to do on damp proofing and timber preservation, and 4 windows need attention. A couple of years or so, we're going to need a costly rethatch. Everything about this listed building is small, apart from the costs involved, that is. Most of the windows are so tiny that the rooms seem to be in dusk all day. The number of rooms is hard to say, as some are an odd shape and lie somewhere between a room and a corridor. The majority of houses, most rooms, have one door. But in our house, every room except one has 2 or more doors. The result is a maze. To get from one room to another, there are several possible routes. Adding to the maze, there are 2 staircases, one so steep and narrow that it is almost a ladder, with a rope instead of a banister. The cottage is full of trip hazards. The floor of almost every room is on a different level. Where there isn't a step or a step down between rooms, there's usually instead a raised threshold lurking to fell the unwary. A corridor, oblique office, running along the back of the tiny cottage narrows at one point to 17 inches. Anyone but a small child has to squeeze through sideways. There's worse. The lowest doorway linking 2 bedrooms with the bathroom is only 41 inches high. That's right! Just 3 foot 5 inches. You have to double over, making your body into an S shape with your head down. The doorway cannot be heightened because of a beam at waist level. The cottage has a frame of oak posts and beams as thick as tree trunks, with infilling of bricks in some parts and mud and straw in others. Some aged windows fit only loosely and let in the sound of cars passing 7 feet from the front door. Sleeping in our new home is like sleeping in a tent because of the gaps in the walls and around the doors. You hear guests in other bedrooms as if they were in your own bedroom. The floor of one bedroom has a hatch which looks like something from a pirate galleon and originally opened to a hole in the ceiling of the kitchen below. Getting from our bedrooms to the dining room involves me stooping, stepping up, stepping down, twisting, squeezing, and hanging on for dear life. By the time my exhausted body reaches the breakfast table, I'm asking why we didn't buy a house with level floors and adequate doorways, the sort of comfortable home enjoyed by sensible people. It would have been cheaper, and anyone who demands an easy life should be glad they don't live here. Well, maybe we will regret the purchase, but so far we're enjoying our historic higgledy-piggledy new home. We'll do our best to protect the cottage for future generations. And maybe all that stooping and squeezing will keep us fit. Right, to Belgarum, who gives us an alternative look at the news. Richard, please.
Yes, and just a warning, I didn't write this, nor did I select it. Rude signs pop up across Winchester. It seems Winchester has a new resident comedian. Neon signs popped up across the city last Thursday, bearing rude slogans such as "cock" and "your mum is fat." The signs, handwritten on cardboard star shapes, have been fixed to buildings around the city, including Jewry and St George's Streets. They shouldn't be too hard to remove, as though they've been stuck on using blue tack. With the current weather, perhaps some strong wind and rain will be enough to wash them away.
Thank you, Richard. Claire, please.
Cathedral Community Music Celebration. A university music centre is pushing for more schools to get involved as the countdown to a new community performance closes in. The University of Winchester Music Centre has joined forces with Winchester City of Sanctuary to create a musical space for Sanctuary. The Cross Music and Arts event, taking place on November the 23rd inside Winchester Cathedral, aims to celebrate diversity and unity by standing with those seeking sanctuary. Contributions such as instrumental or choral, music, words, poems, movement, dance, or visual arts from groups, clubs, schools and individuals have been encouraged to emphasise that all are welcome in Winchester. The university's creative director, Neil Valentine, said, "This event is about bringing all parts of our community together, using music in the incredible Winchester Cathedral. Everyone is welcome to be with us, to make music, to celebrate our common humanity and share this incredible event. Everyone who attends as performers or audience will be immersed in a performance unlike anything else they have experienced. We will all be moved and amazed by each other's music. I cannot wait." Ahead of the performance, the Music Centre has shared instructions and music for the day to those who have shown interest in taking part. Groups will come together from 2 p.m. before the performance to the rest of the public at 5:30 p.m.
Thank you, Claire. My piece is headed "Latest Play Unveiled by the Chesil Theatre."
Oh.
The November production at the Chesil Theatre looks at how a play agent, Peggy Ramsey, influenced theatre in the second half of the 20th century. She nurtured novice playwrights including Robert Bolt, David Hare and Alan Ayckbourn. Alan Plater was one of her clients for 30 years, achieving great success in radio, film, stage and television. In Peggy for You, he has created a terrific play which shows Peggy in her chaotic office with three clients in the course of an imaginary day. The play opens on Saturday, November the 19th. Tickets are £10. I'm not sure that's a correct figure, actually. But it's available from the Chesil Theatre. Now, our historical item this week is read by Richard, please.
And this was referred to recently in a letter, wasn't it, which Claire read. New app focuses on city history. Winchester's newest attraction, recreating key moments from Anglo-Saxon history through the world of a video game, opened at the weekend. 878 AD was unveiled at the Brook Shopping Centre and takes people back to the defeat of the Vikings by Alfred the Great at the Battle of Edington in May 878. It uses the graphics of Assassin's Creed Valhalla to show what Winchester looked and sounded like at the time. The experience is made up of two parts. A physical visitor attraction in the Brooks features actors dressed in the clothes of the time acting out typical scenes of Winchester in 878. There's also an app that people can download, which uses augmented reality to show key moments from Winchester's past. It's been developed by the Hampshire Cultural Trust, Ubisoft and Sugar Creative. Paul Sapwell, chief executive of Hampshire Cultural Trust, said, "We felt that Winchester was crying out for another attraction which brings the story to a wider audience. The Assassin's Creed collaboration really gives us something special. I think the people of Winchester will be excited to see something as forward-thinking and as immersive as this come to the city. It will bring footfall into the centre of the city and to the Brook Centre. Through the immersive app, folks who know the city really well will get something out of it, seeing it through a different light." Ryan Lavelle, Professor of Early Medieval History at the University of Winchester, said, "I've been involved right from the beginning as a historical advisor. It gave us a chance to explore what people might feel and the sort of pressures around at the time of 878. I also had involvement in how little dramas involving the actors would play out. Winchester is a city with a lot of history to it. A lot of things happened here. On the streets of Winchester, it's not always easy to perceive the past. Hopefully, this helps to bring that alive and inspire people to learn more about that period." 878 AD opens on November the 12th in the Brook Shopping Centre. For more details, visit 878ad.co.uk.
Thank you, Richard. Now we go on to a number of What's On items. We're going to be going round the table, starting with Claire, please.
This one says, "Libraries story time, not just for children. Winchester Library is showing that story time is not just for children with its new adult-only reading sessions. The library, inside the Ark in Jury Street, is hosting free read-aloud sessions for those aged over 16 to come and hear a selection of classic and modern stories. Taking place every Wednesday at 10:30 a.m. until December the 14th, adults are being encouraged to escape to the library for a warm and welcoming space and listen to poems, novels or non-fiction for half an hour. The executive member for Countryside, Culture and Communities at Hampshire County Council, Russell Oppenheimer, said, "Through our Read Aloud project, we're inviting adults and teenagers aged 16 and over to come to the library at the Ark in Winchester over the coming weeks to hear a mixture of short stories and extracts from novels, both old and new, being read out loud for half an hour at a time. These sessions have been created to provide a chance to relax and keep warm in a safe and inclusive community space. While attending these sessions, people can also access a range of free or low-cost resources, such as free Wi-Fi and the use of a computer, as well as information about events, activities, and learning opportunities. Should we see further demand for Read Aloud sessions, we will explore the possibility of running additional sessions. No booking is required. For more information, contact Winchester. winchester.library@hants.gov.uk.
Thank you, Claire. My piece is headed Lights Train Adds Splash of Colour to Party Season. A colourful steam train will be brightening up the Hampshire countryside as it returns to an historic railway this winter. Hampshire's Watercrest line, which runs from Alresford to Alton, will host its Steam Illuminations train from November to January, and this year is the perfect place for a Christmas party. The sound and light show features a constantly changing display of colourful computer-controlled LED lights outside and inside the Heritage Steam train. New for 2022, there will be two ways to enjoy the spectacular event. Steam Illusion trains will be running as usual, with an immersive experience for all the family with fun, festive music. And then, on selected evenings, there will be a further transformation into a Steam Illuminations party mix, Trains for the over-80s wanting to celebrate Christmas with a difference. The new Steam Illuminations Party mix trains will include a specially curated DJ soundtrack playing some of the best music from the 1960s all the way through to the present day, creating a fun and unique atmosphere on board that will keep your feet tapping and get you dancing in the aisles. All visitors to this spectacular light show train rides will be provided with an LED wristband which interacts with the onboard music and lights. In addition to some great festive tunes, entertainment will be provided along the way by the one and only voiceover man, as heard on Britain's Got Talent. Glittering static outdoor light displays will light up the journey as passengers travel by steam up and down the Heritage Railway line. Festive treat boxes and drinks hampers can also be pre-ordered and collected on arrival. The Watercress Line CEO, Amanda Squires, said, "We can't wait to brighten up the dark winter nights with our breathtaking steam illuminations and the brand new Steam Illuminations Party mix trains this festive season. It will be a wonderful experience and is sure to get everybody in the mood for Christmas. The event is always popular, so please make sure you book your tickets early online. Come on board and enjoy the festivities." So to book tickets for the Steam Illuminations at the watercressline.co.uk/Steam Illuminations. And Richard,
time for a drink,
piece.
I think.
Yes.
Winery plans festive events.
Ooh.
A vineyard in the heart of the Test Valley is preparing for Christmas with festive activities. Hampshire Vineyard and Winery Black Chalk Estate is hosting two Christmas events in the run-up to the holidays. The wine venue alongside the River Test has teamed up with Stockbridge-based Featherstone Flowers for a festive wreath-making workshop on Friday, November the 25th from 5:30 to 8:30. A Christmas winery tour and tasting event will be available on Friday, November the 18th, that's today, Saturday, November the 26th and Saturday, December the 17th. For more on the venue's upcoming events, go to blackchalkwine.co.uk/what's on.
Thank you, Richard. Claire?
Santa set for Cosmic Christmas. This festive season, Santa will be visiting Winchester Science Centre to tell the tale of his first mission to deliver presents to the International Space Station. Together with Asta, the intergalactic planetary elf, they will bring their Christmas tale to life through immersive experiences and storytelling. And though it sounds like Christmas magic, it's a story based on scientific fact. Astronauts aboard the International Space Station receive gifts on Christmas morning that are sent to space ahead of their mission by their families. Between Saturday, December the 3rd and Saturday, December the 24th, the Science Centre will be exploring plenty more Christmas crossovers during 45-minute shows in the planetarium. Listen as they recreate the epic tale of their first mission to the International Space Station, and watch as the story is brought to life through live science and an out-of-this-world journey through space. Families can also find out if they've got what it takes to live and work in space. The Winchester Science Centre The Winchester Science Centre space commanders are on the lookout for new recruits to join them at the Space Station Science Training Academy. Astronauts in training will be put through their paces in order to graduate from the training academy.
Opera stars Xmas concert. Christmas concert. The church in Winchester will host a unique Christmas concert in aid of Ukrainian families. Acclaimed opera singer and Michalovo resident John Lofthouse, who has performed with the likes of English National Opera and Opera Holland Park, will be premiering his one-man show, Wise Man, at the United Church in Jewry Street on Saturday, December the 3rd. All net proceeds from the concert will go to the church's Ukrainian Refugee Meet and Greet Fund, allowing families to meet weekly at the church to play, socialise, speak their home language and share experiences. Tickets are £10 per person, available from Ticket Source. And then a couple of things that are happening next Wednesday, the 23rd. There's Chess the Musical, which is being presented at The Point in Eastleigh. And the same night, James Wilton Dance. James Wilton Dance are one of the Europe's most in-demand dance companies. And they present their play, their dance presentation, The Four Seasons. And that is at the Theatre Royal Winchester. Now, finally, before we go on to items of general news, let's have a look at the lighting up times for the coming week. The sun, if there is any, will rise at about 6:50 and set again at around 4:50 p.m. So on to the general news, and the first one from Richard, please.
Theatre Group wins Business Tech Award. A Winchester theatre group won at the South Coast Business Awards. Blue Apple was presented the award for Best Use of Technology at St Mary's Stadium in Southampton. Trustee Lucy McKenna said, "I'm very proud of this award. It reflects the resilience and adaptability of our participants, staff and volunteers in a very challenging period. Blue Apple has embraced change and used digital technology to our advantage to make our delivery agile, more inclusive and ever more creative." The South Coast Business Awards were organised by Local IQ, Daily Echo and NewsQuest, and the award for Best Use of Technology was sponsored by Starling Bank, Hampshire Chamber of Commerce, Utilita, the University of Southampton and Get Set Solent. Blue Apple provides equal access to performing arts for people with learning disabilities, which was particularly difficult during the pandemic. With digital tools, Blue Apple was able to keep contact going with its clients while performers quickly adapted and mastered the technical skills they needed. Post-pandemic, Blue Apple has kept some online learning in place as it enables long-distance participation and remote access by those who sometimes cannot attend in person.
Thank you, Richard. Claire, please.
City remembers at Cathedral Service. Scores of people gathered to remember those who have given their lives in service on Remembrance Sunday. On Sunday, November the 13th, Bishop Debbie Selin and Dean Catherine Ogle led the Remembrance Day service at Winchester Cathedral. At 10 a.m., Custos rang the bell to signal the start of the service, which began with the choir Introit. They shall not grow old as we who are left grow old, and continues with familiar music and readings. Shortly before 11 a.m., the congregation joined the hundreds gathered outside in the outer close for the official 2-minute silence. Wreaths were laid at the war memorial by dozens of local groups and associations, as well as Steve Bryan, MP for Winchester, led by Admiral Ian Henderson, Vice Lord Lieutenant, representing His Majesty the King.
Thank you, Claire. My piece is headed Repair and Replace Plan for Shelters. Funding to replace bus shelters in Winchester has been agreed. Winchester Town Forum approved an extra £10,000 to replace and refurbish dilapidated shelters across the city. A recent survey found that out of the 62 bus shelters which the town is responsible for, 13 are in a poor state, 4 need replacing, and the other 9 can be repaired. It also found that the shelters are in need of replacement are Cromwell Road, opposite the sports club, Andover Road, adjacent to North Hill Close, Andover Road, adjacent to the Jolly Farmer pub, and Hillside Road, take down. The installation of the new shelters and repairing of the older shelters will be phased over 5 years. Speaking at the meeting of the Town Forum on November the 9th, former City Councillor Ian Tate said, "The report mentions that the town is responsible for 62 shelters across the 5 wards, yet there are many more in the town area. So why is the forum only responsible for 62? What are the current criteria for getting a bus shelter installed? The council's website doesn't give any clues. It's really difficult to find the bus shelter form." A local resident regularly raises the issue of 3 bus shelters on the south side of City Road. He feels they are excessive and detract from the street scene. He also argues that only 2 of them are required. The 3rd can be deployed elsewhere. Jury Street has 3 bus stops, but only 1 bus shelter. Why is that? Sadly, we regularly see bus shelters vandalised. Councillor Kelsey Learney said, "The 62 bus shelters belong to the town. The others are maintained by Clear Channel in exchange for advertising. The current budget of £10,000 is only to clean and maintain the bus shelters, not to replace them. The additional £10,000 will be sufficient for replacements. Clear Channel maintains the City Road shelters." Councillor Martin Todd, leader of the council, made it clear to members of the forum that the 2 lots of bus shelters remain separate. The agreement is that Clear Channel maintain their bus shelters in exchange for advertising and that they can therefore replace them if needed. Richard, please.
Fears disease could wipe out the city's trees. Winchester's ash trees could be wiped out by 2030, according to a report. The city's tree strategy stated that across the UK, 95% of ash trees would be gone as a result of ash dieback. The strategy was presented to Winchester Town Forum on November the 9th, with tree works carried out more frequently in recent months. Trees on the Broadway and St George's Street are just some that have been given the chop. Winchester City Council currently owns and manages around 32,000 trees across the district. About 1,200 of these are ash. The report says that disease can infect ash trees of all ages, and once an ash tree is infected, the disease restricts the flow of water and nutrients, leading to the tree's rapid decline and potential death. Ash tree dieback is now widespread across the UK, and current estimates suggest that it could lead to the loss of 95% of all ash trees by 2030. This disease will have a dramatic effect on the landscape within Winchester, as it's predicted that the effects of ash dieback on the local landscape will be greater than Dutch elm disease. However, it's not possible to predict the landscape or ecological impacts of the loss of ash trees at this time. Dieback is spread through the movement of diseased ash plants and logs and unsawn wood from infected trees. A ban was applied on all movement of ash trees and seeds in October 2012. However, prior to that, there were high volumes of ash imported to the UK every year. Councillor Kelsey Learney said, "Additional funding is needed to look after our trees. They have huge wealth and, health and well-being benefits. It takes decades for trees to become carbon positive." Councillor John Tippett-Cooper said, "People are very passionate about trees in this district, and rightly so. They have an absolutely key role to play in tackling the climate emergency." The Town Forum approved just over 21,000 for this year and an additional nearly 12,000 for next year for tree works across the city.
Richard, clear?
Homeless charity says cash would be lifesaver. A homeless shelter is hoping for as many votes as possible to to help break the cycle of homelessness and get residents back on their feet. Winchester Beacon is among 10 charities in the region that have been shortlisted for Reader's Choice Cash for Charity, a giveaway from the Hampshire Chronicle's parent company's charitable arm, the Gannett Foundation. The charity, formerly known as Winchester Church's Night Shelter, relies on donations and funding to provide a sanctuary for homeless people before supporting them in finding a job and new residence. The homeless shelter is guaranteed a share of £16,000 along with the other 9 charities. The shortlist was based on thousands of votes from readers. Winchester Beacon admin assistant Nikki Roberts said, "We're delighted that we've been considered for the scheme. A million things go through my mind when I think about how much funding means to us. Donations are a lifesaver. They mean we have an opportunity, resident, with something they might need, such as a driving licence, to help them get a job. And this is our total motivation. We're not a drop-in shelter. This is a heart, a family and a home. We'd like as much help as possible. The sky is the limit." The Winchester Beacon has 13 permanent staff members. Meanwhile, hundreds of volunteers help with cooking, cleaning, overnight stays and professional support. Volunteers help to save the beacon approximately £108,990 per year from around 10,899 donated hours. Any money the charity saves or receives is put back into the service for residents. The shelter prioritises a warm bed and nutritious food for its residents. In addition to a place to call home, the charity provides a support programme to help people find more permanent accommodation, work through any problems which may have led to their homelessness, and prepare them for independent living when they're ready to move on. For more, go to wcns.org.uk/. The amount each charity will receive comes down to how many tokens it collects. Voting tokens found in the Hampshire Chronicle and Romsey Advertiser must be sent to Hampshire Chronicle Reader's Choice Cash for Charity Vote, Fleet House, Hampshire Road, Weymouth, DT4 9XD, by Sunday, November the 20th. That's a bit near, but hope it goes well.
Claire, my piece is headed Nature Helping Mental Health. A Spring Watch star is set to share the importance of nature for improving mental health in a talk in aid of a youth counselling charity. Naturist, TV presenter, photographer and author Chris Packham will be leading a lecture at the University of Winchester on Thursday, December the 1st. The celebrity will be exploring how nature can be used to ease the symptoms of debilitating mental health conditions, including depression and seasonal affective disorder. Winchester Youth Counselling, WYC, announced Packham as its patron in April 2022, and the lecture, titled Nature on My Mind, The Impact of Nature and Wildlife and Caring for the Environment and Our Mental Health, will be his first for the counselling service. All proceeds from ticket sales go to All proceeds from ticket sales to the talk, jointly hosted by the university and WYC, will go to the mental health charity based at the Winchester Centre. The CEO of Winchester Youth Counselling, Erin McMurty, said, "We are incredibly grateful to Chris for being a patron of Winchester Youth Counselling and sharing his valuable time with us. We are hugely looking forward to hearing what he has to say about nature and mental health, which is an area of work that is so important to us and so valuable to young people in Winchester." The celebrity, best known for presenting the BBC's Spring Watch, Autumn Watch and Winter Watch series, will present evidence behind the positive link of spending time in the natural environment and its impact on mental health. Nature-based interventions have become increasingly popular in healthcare, education and rehabilitation. Vice-Chancellor at the University of Winchester, Professor Sarah Greer, said, "The benefits of green spaces and the natural environment for our health and well-being are increasingly recognised, particularly since COVID. And so we are delighted to welcome Chris Packham to talk about the important issue of mental health and how research backs up the powerful idea that nature is a good medicine." The lecture will take place at 7:15 on Thursday, December the 1st, with light refreshments available from 6:30 at the West Downs Centre, Romsey Road, Winchester. Tickets cost £20 or £16.50 for students and the under-18s. All funds go directly to the Winchester Youth Counselling. Chris Packham walked the Itchen Navigation for a BBC programme, Chris Packham, The Walk That Made Me, in which he shared stories of his childhood growing up in Hampshire countryside and battling mental health issues. Richard, please.
Residents panic as leak swamps flats. Residents at a block of flats in Winchester were left disgusted with the council after it took hours to respond to a leak that caused flooding and left people without water, heating or electricity. A pipe burst round the back of Craddock House in Winnell at 4 a.m. on Saturday, November the 12th. Videos show gallons of water spewing from the pipe, which poured into the bottom three floors. Residents were quick to call Winchester City Council, but contractors didn't arrive until around 11 p.m., to fix the problem. Alicia Stevens moved to the property in August with her three-year-old autistic son. The mother, who's 20 weeks pregnant, called the council and Southern Water more than 20 times. The first floor resident said their communication was ridiculous. The number of calls it took to get them to do their job was astonishing. "We had loads of flood damage. It was continuous towels, but it was coming through the boiler, which meant if we had to turn the electricity switched off. We had no hot water and no heating. The water wasn't even dripping. It was pouring out of the bottom of the boiler." Veronica Englefield, who lives on the second floor, said, "They should have come out straight away because it was an emergency for everybody. Their response was disgusting, really appalling." During the day, the water spouting out of the pipe changed direction to hit Veronica's window and started to come through the resident's air vent and boiler. Veronica, 45, added, "Gallons of water was coming out really fast and it was reaching the second floor where I live. I got really panicked and distressed. What I panicked about is the pressure was so strong that my window could have smashed, and then what would I have done? The whole flat would have been flooded." Spokesperson for the fire service said, "A crew from Winchester Fire Station were called to a flooded property on Will Manor Road on Saturday after the wall had started to affect electrics. At 9:14 p.m. on Saturday, the council posted on Facebook, 'We are aware of a water leak that is affecting some properties at Craddock House, Winnell. Hampshire Fire and Rescue Services are on site and our contractors are responding.'" According to Veronica, she phoned the council at 7 a.m, but they said they didn't hear of any issue until 2 p.m. Winchester City Council has been contacted for a comment.
Thank you, Richard. Claire, please.
Another crash at notorious spot. Another crash disrupted traffic at the Cart and Horses Junction at Kingsworthy. At least two vehicles were involved in an incident at around 1 p.m, according to reports on social media. It did not appear to be serious, but is the fourth collision at the junction in recent weeks, including one that caused the death of a woman in her 70s in a two-car collision on October the 25th. Local people have been campaigning for either a set of traffic lights or a roundabout. But the County Council says that the fatality record is not sufficient to warrant such measures. It is unclear whether the death on October the 25th will alter that. A pedestrian was knocked down and killed near the junction in 2016. Local councillor Jackie Porter has been campaigning since 2014 for changes. She said measures introduced a few years ago had created even more confusion. Social media was full of comments from people expressing their frustration that the County Council has made no improvements. One poster, Jason Judd, wrote on Winchester Rant's Facebook, £20.65 million being wasted on Brighton Hill roundabout at Basingstoke, £7.65 million of which funded by the HCC. I'm sure they could spare £1 million to help prevent further fatalities by improving this junction.
Thank you, Claire. This piece I've got is headed Cash Machine Raid Trio Must Pay £3,000. A gang that made more than £600,000 by blowing up ATMs and stealing money across Hampshire has been ordered to pay less than £3,000 back. Five men using crowbars, gas and petrol to blow up ATMs and steal thousands of pounds in cash. Cameron Chivers of Lydgate Road, Southampton, Adam Jones, 32, of Fareham, Colin Golding, 27, of Farnborough, Jesse Matthews, 21, from Borden, and David Hughes of Street End Close, Rotherwick, were jailed at Winchester Crown Court earlier this year. But this week, during a Proceeds of Crime Act hearing at the same court, some of the men were ordered to pay back just £2,882.41. The court heard how Matthews had made £37,000 in total from his criminality, but due to his inability to pay any money, he was asked just to pay back £1. However, if the money isn't paid within 7 days, he will face a further 7 days imprisonment. Meanwhile, Jones bagged £349,000 from the robberies, but it was found he's only able to pay back £41.41, which he must do in 2 months or be jailed for 7 extra days. The court was told how Hughes, who had been the gang's ringleader, had raked in £298,000 and must therefore pay back £2,840 in 28 days or go to jail for an extra month. Golding and Chivers are due to appear at the hearing in November, where it will be discussed how much they made from the gang. Excuse me. It comes after the fivesome was jailed in February, with Hughes getting 17 months, Jones 13 and a half months, Golding 9, Chivers 8 years and 4 months, and Matthews 6 years and 8 months. The ATM raids took place over 9 months in 2019 and 2020. Richard, please.
Delay for restaurant. The opening of a long-awaited Winchester restaurant has been postponed due to building maintenance issues. Now, I'm going to have to spell the name, and I'm not at all sure how to say it. It's spelt Y-I-A, YIAS. Yias, Greek and Cypriot Kitchen, had announced a soft opening for yesterday, Wednesday, the November the 16th, but that's been pushed back to Tuesday, November the 22nd. The restaurant, which took over from Tom's Deli on St George's Street, is the first Greek eatery of its kind in the city. Yias is set to bring 10 jobs to Winchester and will serve Greek food and beer. Owner Paul Pirogoudis said, "We're honoured to be part of the Winchester community."
Thank you, Richard. Claire?
Eurovision winner tops off celebration. Ukrainian guests delivered a powerful display of dance, song and video presentation to spectators at a city centre church. Since the start of the war in Ukraine in February, Winchester Rotary has been part of community initiatives seeking to help Ukrainian refugees arriving in Winchester, as well as assisting relief efforts in Ukraine itself. Earlier in the year, a number of street collections were organised and an event at the Ark, facilitated by Winchester Rotary, brought the various refugee communities together, and a performance of Ukrainian dance and song was staged. At the recent cultural held at St. Lawrence Church, some of the Ark performers returned with an hour-long presentation, Ukraine, UK Undefeated. They depicted the consequences of the war and portrayed the ways in which refugees in Winchester are adapting to their new surroundings. Winchester Rotarian Jill Russell said, "A particular delight was a children's choir who performed the Ukrainian Eurovision-winning song."
Thank you, Claire. The last item of this general news is headed £68,000 bill for felling trees. A developer who was ordered to pay nearly £70,000 for tearing down historic woodland has lost an appeal against his sentence. James Barney was refused an appeal against his hefty fine at Southampton Crown Court on Friday. The 35-year-old from Burslem was fined £50,000 in September for hacking down around 53 protected trees in Horton Heath. Appearing at Southampton Magistrates Court, he was also ordered to pay £17,000 in cost to Eastleigh Borough Council and a victim surcharge of £190, bringing his total outgoings to over £68,000. If he is unable to pay within 6 weeks, he will serve a 12-month prison sentence. Well, I'm sorry to say that's all we have for you this week. Before we go, another reminder that if you have any problems with your recording, the contact number is on the key fob attached to the memory stick. You please put the memory stick in the wallet when you finish with it and return it to us as soon as possible. Thanks to all the support teams that helped with the preparation and dispatch of this issue. And, of course, many thanks to our readers. Richard.
Goodbye.
Claire.
Bye.
And from me, Peter. Until next time, goodbye.